Football Monday. Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley, that dude. Coming up, I'll tell you how the Steelers just proved they're a hot mess.
Plus, we'll tell you if Triple G got robbed this weekend. I'm going to tell you he did get robbed. But we're going to start off today with the Whitlock. What you got today, big dog?
Oh, man. NFL Week 2 was flat out amazing. Mm-hmm. Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes tossed 6 touchdown passes and looked like the son of Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. Blake Bortles stitched a clown suit on Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and the Patriots.
That ain't right.
Ryan Fitzpatrick unveiled so much swag in-game and post-game that Broadway bro no Namath tried to holler at Subi Colbert again.
Stop that.
An overprotective ref stole a victory from the Green Bay Packers inside Lambeau Field, but one man topped all of it. One man stood above all the heroics and catapulted himself into the history books. Vontae Davis. Vontae marked the NFL weekend his when he told Sean McDermott and the Bills, "You can take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more." With the Bills down 28-6 at halftime and on their way to 0-2, Vontae Paycheck quit. The two-time Pro Bowler and Bills starter on Sunday took off his uniform, showered, and vacated the building formerly known as Ralph Wilson Stadium. The 30-year-old cornerback later released a statement. "This isn't how I pictured retiring, but today on the field, reality hit me fast and hard. I shouldn't be out there anymore." Davis's teammates were shocked, shook, and steamed.
Never have seen it ever. Pop Warner, high school, college, pros, never heard of it, never seen it. And it's just completely disrespectful his teammates.
Did he say anything to you?
Did he say anything?
He didn't say nothing to nobody.
He left?
You know as much as I know. I found out going in the second half of the game. Coming out, they said he's not coming out, he retired. So.
All right, get used to it, Lorenzo. This is the new NFL, the new world of sports. It's all just a reality TV show, a platform to play to a brand or a character. Anybody remember season 3 of MTV's The Real World? It was 24 years ago. The setting was San Francisco. They cast this dude, Puck, to raise hell in the house, and he got kicked off because he clashed with an AIDS activist, Pedro Zamora. Puck was as odd a human as anybody could possibly be, but he was television gold. He made the real world a television force. Quitting used to be taboo in sports. It's the ultimate no-no. But in reality TV, quitting or getting kicked off is as commonplace and a way to launch a brand. Just ask Colin Kaepernick.
Oh, stop that, bro. Come on now.
All right. Just ask Ali Fedotowsky. Ali became famous by quitting Jake and The Bachelor to return to her real job at Facebook. She gained so much notoriety that ABC quickly made her the star of The Bachelorette. You think there aren't TV producers holding meetings about Vontae Davis right now? Let me tell you how crazy things have gotten. LeBron James and Maverick Carter are probably sitting in their TV production offices wondering right now, Vontae Davis, Jemele Hill, The Beauty Shop. Think it'll work?
Chill, bro.
Vontae Davis is just a different iteration of Puck. Take a look at his 2012 work from Hard Knocks.
Okay, so the rumor is true, okay? We just traded you, okay? We traded you to the Indianapolis Colts, all right? So, you okay?
Nah, I'm going to call my grandmother.
You going to call your grandmother?
Yeah.
Okay, this hasn't hit the papers or anything like that. Okay, well, why don't we do a little business first, okay? Before you call grandma, okay?
The sports world has changed. It's becoming more and more like Hollywood. Child stars are imploding under the pressure, the hype, and fame. Quitting is no longer taboo in sports. Vontae is an example of what happens when players stop being professional and start getting real. All right. Marcellus.
Man.
This is just the outgrowth of reality TV. These are child stars and they're quitters. And Lorenzo can be upset. You can be upset.
Yeah.
But quitting, I don't think it's taboo anymore.
Is it taboo? That's a good conversation. Let's go here. He's not a pioneer of quitting. He's the next iteration, the deviation from what we've seen of late, from the stars of the NFL all the way down to Vontae Davis. The breadcrumbs for this situation we saw a few years ago when you talk about Pro Bowl level. How about Hall of Fame level players in Patrick Willis and Calvin Johnson? Remember those breadcrumbs that were laid in those moments, which basically said that no player unconditionally loves the game of football. Not a player that has ever stepped on that field has unconditionally loved the game of football. You look at what football has done to all these players. It chose them. They didn't choose football. Let's go back to the pyramid of athletics, the pyramid of athleticism. It all starts at the top, and we know what sport that is. The lovely game of basketball. The game of basketball where if you get hit, you get 2 free throws. Not if you get hit, coach said, go back out there. I don't give a damn about you. And we all have fallen down to the game of football. We didn't land on football. Football landed on us. And you don't believe me? Ask a Tony Gonzalez. If he had a Charlie Ward situation, would he have chose the lovely gridiron or would he have chosen those long baggy shorts and a couple free throws? We know the answer to this, so Vontae Davis is now highlighting what other star players have told you. We don't love football like you think. We love it for what it gives us until we get to that place.
You said a mouthful.
Okay.
You said a mouthful.
Let's go here.
And there's a lot of truth in what you're saying. But I can't go all the way there that people are falling into football because they're not great basketball players.
Oh, really? Jimmy Graham? You want to keep going?
No, listen.
Antonio Gates?
Look, there's a lot of great examples.
Flip it, though. Flip your scenario on his head. How many basketball players say, nah, man, I want to go play football? I'll wait.
Look. I'll wait. Football is a game for people with massive hearts and a little bit crazy. You got to be different.
It's very
There's
true.
There's no question about it. But there are some guys.
I'm going to give you one. Okay.
I'm going to give you one. Ray Lewis would
choose
football.
I knew you were going to go Ray.
Every day.
Yeah.
Ray Lewis would choose football every day of the week.
Yeah, and Ray Lewis also can't play point guard either. 5'11", 240, I'm saying, point guard.
What I'm saying is, if Ray could have been a basketball player, look, you know who's going to be on our show later? Greg Jennings.
Yes.
Hell of a basketball player, went and played football instead.
Terrell Owens is a hell of a basketball player too, but you know what? He went and played what he could play, which is the game of football.
No. Terrell Owens could have played college basketball. Greg Jennings certainly could have.
Right.
Again, so I can't go all the way there, but you've made a hell of a point. Let me ask you this question. Let's narrow in on Vontae Davis.
Let's do it.
Do you have Lorenzo Alexander, no respect for him, you know, thought it was the most disrespectful act in the world. Do you have any respect for Vontae for keeping it that real? That, like, you know what? I don't want to do this. I'm not going to.
Absolutely, I have respect for him. I have more respect for him. Tremendous respect for him to have the courage to talk about what he really feels despite what the reaction would be. Think about what he did. He basically said, it's over. And I know it's over. And he went to a place where a lot of football players desire to go. Because I want to take you into the world of football that's beyond the cheers, that's beyond the boos, beyond the paychecks, beyond all the accolade. Just the day-to-day rigors of that sport. And you know what it is. We've all heard it in cliche, but I don't think we've internalized it. It goes like this. You play on Sunday, you get all this love. Win or lose, you're still one of the most celebrated players and people walking this planet. Then Monday is a recovery day. That means you can walk around, you can go to Cheesecake Factory, you can come to watch some film, we can jog around, but we know you cannot perform physical activities. Tuesday, we call it Tuesday Toradol Tuesday. That means all the medicine, all the injections, all the rigors of that game has to wear off. Then Wednesday, we may start to go at it again. Thursday, oh, you start to feel normal again. Thursday, you feel normal again from a Sunday performance. The point of this is, no one raises their hand and says, that's what I want to do, Daddy. On a Wednesday practice, I want to hit my head 60 times into this 300-pounder and say that was just another day. That's not how the game goes. And Vontae went to a place where a lot of players internally, inside, they're raising their hands as well.
Do they have to raise their hand in the middle of a game? You know, maybe it can't wait till the end of the game. He was 30 minutes. How many? He was 30 more snaps
mm-hmm.
And then he could have quit, and there would virtually be no controversy if he did that. He had 30 more snaps to go. He's prepared all week. Lorenzo and them are sitting around like, hey, man, we prepared all week. We trying to win a game. You still respect in the middle of a game walking away.
Yeah, that's where I will actually take some points away from his act and his actions. I rewind back to the first time I wanted to quit the game of football. I was 12 years young, and I remember we were this is my fourth year of playing football, Pop Warner level. We never lost a game. I'm getting 4 or 5 touchdowns a game. I mean, it's a man. I'm getting recruited by high schools. It's next level love in elementary school. I'm the man. And I remember watching my friends ride by on their bikes and playing Nintendo. And I looked at my daddy and I said, Daddy, I want to quit. And he said, boy, why you want to quit? I said, I'm just tired. It hurts. And all my friends are having fun, not thinking about my future, not thinking about sacrificing for my future. My dad said these simple words. You can't quit something you start. At the end of the season, you want to quit? Your choice. No more football. But you're going to finish what you started. If Vontae's call to his grandmother could have went the way I wanted it to go, grandma would have said, boy, you got to finish what you start, and let's talk about this at the end of the season.
I want to finish on your last point about, or your big point about football players and wanting to quit and how hard. Look, it is. Football is only fun on game day.
Preach.
The rest of it is not fun.
Man.
But what I'll say, though, the exalted place that football players have in this society, to me, justifies the sacrifice. No pain, no gain.
Right.
That applies beyond sports. That applies to the rest of life. If you want to live in that exalted place, if you want to achieve something that everybody has to sit back and go, damn, that's incredible. When I see LeBron and a lot of the basketball players, I look and see some of, like, God kissed them at birth, mm-hmm. in the womb. Mm-hmm. He kissed them in a way that we other people just don't get kissed, and therefore they're great basketball players. The same thing happens in football, but it requires a massive amount of sacrifice and work to even take advantage of whatever gifts God gave you. And so that level, the level of respect you can ask as a warrior and as a champion in football is unlike anything else in American society, and it makes it worth it to me.
I totally agree with that, the rewards you get from it. To get a collective of guys, 53 in the pro level, hundreds on the high school team and hundreds on the collegiate team, to all make that ultimate sacrifice. We all know we're sitting there looking at each other like, man, if you don't show up, I won't show up. But you did show up, so I must show up. No matter if I could walk that day, I will run to the ball. No matter how it feels in that moment, I will do all I can. To have that as a collective emotion and then to actually achieve the goal that all of us are looking at differently, but we have to get to one place on the same page, no other sport can get you to that place. That said, if we could choose the other way, path of less resistance, we would have.
All right, stick around. Later in the show, we'll give you our approval ratings for Vontae Davis. Here's where they were before his sudden retirement, with both of us having him at a Hall of Good level at 58. I'm guessing that may drop a little. All right, welcome back. I'm Jason Whitlock. He's Marcellus Wiley. Time for some big stories. Let's start with Urban Meyer, who will be back on the sidelines this weekend after spending much of his 3-game suspension trying to clear his name in the media. Meyer put out a statement on Twitter a couple of weeks ago, then did an interview this weekend with ESPN. Today, he addressed the issue again at a press conference where he was asked directly about Courtney Smith's allegations.
Lastly, do you believe that, that Courtney Smith was ever a victim of domestic violence?
I can only rely on what information I received from the experts.
All right, that answer did not go over well, and I think Urban Meyer has now put out 4 different statements on Twitter. He's had the Big Ten Media Day press conference, now this one, the interview with Tom Rinaldi and ESPN. There's a narrative building that it's not just what happened with Zach Smith and his wife and how he handled that. Now there's a narrative, the way Urban Meyer has handled the aftermath has damaged his reputation as well. I don't believe that, but I'm wondering how you feel about the way he's handled it, and has he done further damage to his reputation?
Oh, he certainly has. Have you made things better or have you made things worse? Going back to the football field and how coaches evaluate somebody. Did you get better today or did you get worse? Urban Meyer didn't get better from handling this situation. So why has he made it worse? I like the fact that you made the distinction between what actually occurred and his handling of that situation. And I think it lacks the sensitivity and the empathy that we usually see in someone who has contrition, because we're all at fault in something in our lives. And if you're going to handle this as a person of power, then you have to make sure you display that emotion, that empathy, that respect for whatever happened. Not casting judgment, but certainly saying, I don't know exactly what happened, but I am still concerned and I still am sympathetic to those involved. He doesn't show that.
I agree with you. He has not done what PR people would probably advise him to do. He has not done what people over Twitter wants him to do. It's hard for me to come down on him, though, because I think he's done what's authentic and real to him. All the people over Twitter that are hammering him right now about his response to was Courtney Smith the victim.
Yeah.
All the people, they have far less information than Urban Meyer. Mm. And if Urban Meyer sitting there, and again, I've lived long enough and had enough friends and been in enough relationships myself that it's hard for me to speculate about what's going on in someone else's home.
Yes.
And I'm a type of, let me rely on the experts, because when I get to speculating about what's going on with someone, I'm often wrong and people are talking out of ignorance. And so I think Urban gave a very real answer.
He did. And look, Dave Chappelle said, when keeping it real goes wrong, you can find yourself in that position. I'm glad you said the fact that Urban Meyer looks at this situation from a different scope. And I want to take you inside that bubble. As you know, being in relationships, being on this planet longer than I have, he's a coach of a football team. Trust me, behind closed doors, he's seen a lot of scenarios that look one way and turned out a different way. I'll give you one of my own. I'm a young player playing for the Buffalo Bills. I'm having a heated discussion with someone I was involved with. That discussion was not going the right way. And then my spidey senses went off, said, you need to get out this situation. You know how you're going to be perceived. A football player, NFL, big black from Compton, in an altercation with someone, I'm already losing in the court of public opinion. So what do? I exit the home. I leave the room, and I'm starting to walk down the stairs. As I open my door, still to the hysteria from the person I'm involved with, yelling, screaming, I see all of my neighbors on their front lawns looking at me, but backpedaling, already casting that judgment. And I see the police officers coming down the street in their police car. They get out the car. Mr. Wiley, can you explain to us what's happening right now? And before I could even open my mouth, the young lady was outside my bedroom, screaming from the bedroom, help, Marcellus Wiley, Buffalo Bills attacking me right now, help, please. And the police officers take a look up there, trying to make it seem like in the moment I was even in the house, let alone doing something to her. And he looked at me and said, we'll handle this situation from here. The point of that being, even people who think they knew what was going on, closer than you, I, Urban Meyer, to this situation, thought they knew what happened. And sometimes it's not exactly as it seems.
We've talked this story before, previously, and it's a very powerful story, and it does speak to a level of truth that sometimes we in the media aren't interested in.
No.
We want easy villains and easy heroes, and once we've cast someone down a narrative, we don't care what. And so I don't want to remotely be insensitive to Courtney Smith and
exactly
what transpired in their relationship, but I'm not going to crucify Urban Meyer for being authentic to what he believes, not what social media and the rest of the media believe.
And to err on the side of caution in situations like this.
All right, to Pittsburgh, where things may be spiraling out of control for Mike Tomlin and the Steelers. On the field, Pittsburgh just got rocked by Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs a week after tying the lowly Browns. But things may actually be worse off the field, with Le'Veon Bell still holding out and Antonio Brown using Twitter to vent his frustrations. Today,
a former Steelers PR guy tweeted that AB needs to thank his lucky stars because he was drafted by a team that had Ben, and Ben got AB paid. You know darn well he wouldn't put up those numbers for other teams. To which Brown responded, quote, trade me. Let's find out.
Boom. What?
Can the Steelers stay out of the news, man? Just for a minute.
We are the news. What you mean?
Can the Steelers just stay out of the headlines? AB, and I'm sure he doesn't mean he wants to be traded, but some people will construe it as that.
Yeah.
This team on the field, on the defensive side of the ball, is a complete mess and a joke.
Right.
I just think the more this swirls, I just think at some point Mike Tomlin's going to be in some hot water, man. This team is a bit of a mess.
You talk about it, hot water, and it's amazing that what made AB's blood boil is the same thing Tom Brady hears every single day when you compare him to all the greats of our game. Oh, he's a system player. If he were somewhere else, Tom Brady wouldn't be Tom Brady. And you know what Brady does usually? Well, all right. That's what y'all think. That's what y'all want to believe. And I wish Antonio Brown went there, but he didn't go there. So let's talk about the reaction and the consequences of him going here once again at someone outside, whether it's a reporter or someone who used to work with the Steelers organization. There's not a problem in Pittsburgh. At least it's not Mike Tomlin as
they 0-1-1. There's a problem.
Oh, but there are look, first of all, that's a better record than some other teams out there with higher expectations. Look, if you're New England right now, no matter how you got there, you're 1-1 sitting there like, ooh, very interesting. Do we have what it takes to go back to the Super Bowl? I'm looking at Mike Tomlin, and if I'm Mike Tomlin, sometimes you have to pound your own chest so they can know who not to mess with. Mike Tomlin is, by win percentage, second in the NFL of all head coaches behind only Bill Belichick. Mike Tomlin is one of only 8 coaches right now on the sideline saying, oh, you see this? Yeah, that's a Super Bowl ring. I did that. Only 8. And then Mike Tomlin's like, forget that. Y'all want to clown? You know how many coaches there have been in NFL history? I'm one of only 32 that have actually won a Super Bowl. Why y'all taking shots at the throne? Look, I have a bunch of young star players that are hard to deal with because they have dynamic personalities. I got a star quarterback who wants to retire one day. Next day, we draft somebody. He wants to play forever. I got a receiver that wants the ball every single play, and deservingly so. I have young players that have political opinions, and they're not always going to be in alignment to my opinion. But Mike Tomlin, the coach, and dealing with personalities has done a tremendous job.
I think all of what you said is true, but none of that protects a coach from getting into hot water. Sometimes coaches' voices get tuned out when they stay too long. Sometimes a situation that used to be ideal and great for a coach, it sours and goes to where they have to go to another place. Bill Parcells coached 2 or 3, 4 different places in the NFL. When you're an excellent coach, sometimes you can get tuned out and you just need to start over. And I'm just saying, the Steelers, time after time after time, there's just off-field issue, controversy. They roughed the kicker and took themselves out of a chance to win that game.
Bad.
They just do dumb stuff too often. And this is not me saying Mike Tomlin's a bad coach. I think he's an excellent coach. This situation here in Pittsburgh, though, might not be fixable by Mike Tomlin.
And I think Mike Tomlin should be in a protected space like a Bill Belichick is, who still has issues on his own roster. Last year, the implosion of the New England Patriots after many years of success.
While in the Super Bowl. Kind of imploding.
Well, if New England's not in the AFC, Pittsburgh's in the Super Bowl every year. They probably think Jacksonville's coming. But the point of this is, I think we're highlighting the disciplinary issues with this team and not highlighting enough of the success of this team in terms of wins and losses. And that's what Mike Tomlin is about, winning football.
All right, welcome back. Marcellus and I are joined now by NFL legend and 2019 Hall of Fame nominee and first ballot Hall of Famer, sure to be, Tony Gonzalez.
Yeah, but he's not in the GOAT conversation. According to you, off mic. Don't go there.
Let's move to Tony's old team, the Chiefs, who appear to have found their quarterback with gunslinger Patrick Mahomes throwing 6 touchdowns in a shootout win over the Steelers. Mahomes now has 10 touchdowns through the first 2 weeks, which is actually the most in NFL history, even outpacing Peyton Manning and Tom Brady in their most prolific seasons, which leads many to believe, including myself, that we may be looking at another historic season. I think Patrick Mahomes throws 60 touchdown passes this year. And I say that because he's got Andy Reid as his coach, not Bill Belichick, not John Fox, who Peyton Manning did it with in Denver. He's got Tyreek Hill. He's got Sammy Watkins. He's got Travis Kelce. He's got Kareem Hunt. He's got a good offensive line. And he's got a defense that can't stop anybody. He's going to be in shootouts. The guy's going to score, throw 60 I've never seen anything like Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, and I don't even think you're looking at it through a biased scope, despite all your Kansas City connections, we understand. But you saw it close, up close, and you look at the weapons he has. I mean, DeAnthony Thomas, Black Mamba, maybe one of the most electrifying players we've seen in college football in the last decade. He's like the fourth receiver. Like, we'll get to you later, DeAnthony. He has so many weapons, and we said it after week one. I said, this dude is special. After week one, going to that Chargers game, I was like, it's not even good. It's not even great. This will become next level. I didn't expect that to happen the next week where he sets the NFL record for 10 touchdowns after 2 weeks. What's sustainable is the fact that he has Andy Reid. And when Andy Reid is the mastermind of your offense compared to a John Fox, when you're talking about Peyton Manning or Bill Belichick, defensive-minded coach of Tom Brady, you got a mastermind on your side of the ball with those weapons. I'm with you, Whitlock. Maybe 60.
Yeah. I wouldn't doubt it either. You know, one thing we got to give credit to here is Alex Smith. Okay, this kid came in here, and a lot of people in the talk, he's a Brett Favre, he's a gunslinger, he's going to throw a lot of interceptions, but we just forget that he played Alex Smith. That's a good guy to learn from for that whole year. Alex Smith does not turn the ball over. And it's like a combination of a guy who has that will and that pizzazz and that fearlessness, that poise to throw it down the field where Alex Smith struggled, but then also the understanding that, okay, some situations I need to take a sack or I need to get down, I need to get low, I need to throw it out of bounds. He's playing like a savvy veteran right now, which is something we've never seen. But just like everything else, just like Sam Darnold, first week with the Jets. Let's pump the brakes just a little bit, though, okay?
I know. I disagree, Tony.
It's only been two weeks.
There's no brakes on this bus. And I say that, Tony, because there's so few quarterbacks, and I don't even put Aaron Rodgers in this space, that there's not one area of the field where he can't get to with the football and get to it just like that. This kid is different. It's Aaron Rodgers mixed with Brett Favre. And what you're saying about he learned under Alex Smith how to protect. I just thought the kid would have 3 or 4 interceptions early in the season.
What about Deshaun Watson, though? I mean, we were singing praise about Deshaun Watson, that he was throwing a touchdown every 9 passes or whatever it was.
I love Deshaun, but he's
– little different.
He didn't have those weapons. He didn't have that coach. And he's making the difficult look easy. He's not just dinking and dunking. He's throwing the ball deep, and they're still completing them. And all of the accolade that he was getting was deserved in the offseason and in the training camp. We kept hearing about this guy, and everybody's like, man, pump the brakes, Tony Gonzalez style. Pump the brakes.
Hey, let's roll. Hit the gas, man.
It's going to get cold out in Kansas City soon. Okay, let's just see how that
goes. His arm will never get cold.
Now, I love this kid.
I agree
Don't
with that.
Don't get me wrong. I can't wait to meet him.
The weather could be an issue, but even when you say Deshaun Watson, it's like I saw Deshaun Watson, I was impressed. But I was never, like, just blown away wild. Carson Wentz wowed me early. But there's a guy that comes into a league and does this, just the arm strength, the fearlessness, and just the combination of Andy Reid and all those weapons, and just don't underlook that horrible defense they have is going to make the kid have to throw touchdowns.
And look, think about it. Alex Smith last year. Remember week one against the Patriots? 42-27, 4 touchdowns from Alex Smith. And we know Alex Smith is a good quarterback, but you have someone who has a better skill set playing that same position in that system with matured weapons. It's like wherever you think of him as a quarterback, you can keep that to one column. And then how he will perform in this system with Andy Reid is the conversation we're having. And I'm with Whitlock. I don't know what's going to slow him down because so far, nothing has.
All right, to Dallas, where Dak Prescott and the Cowboys bounced back from a disappointing week one, beating the Giants 20-13 in a game that wasn't as close as the final score.
Dak had a solid night getting production from both his arm and his legs while the defense was downright dominant, sacking Eli Manning 6 times. Dak was far better than I anticipated.
True.
You know, I don't think they have things figured out, though. I think they have things figured out with Dak. They can feel comfortable with him. They still need receiving help, in my belief. They still need to somehow throw a Hail Mary and get a Josh Gordon or somebody in there. You know, I even thought a crazy thought last night. I was like, I wonder what if Megatron would come back.
Man, stop.
Calvin Johnson. just a wild thought, because they still need something. But Dak did make me feel more comfortable. Jerry Jones looked prophetic. Said he could run a little bit like Cam Newton,
yeah.
And he proved him right.
Yeah, I mean, look, they definitely need something. Everything you can, go get Josh Gordon. Stop playing. Like, just go get him. A Decepticon's not walking through the building. Like, Megatron, stop playing there. That's not happening. But they look closer to their ceiling, but their ceiling is so low. Like, being real, this offense, even if it plays to an optimal level, is anemic by NFL standards. They will not, 20 points against a bad Giants defense, which one play is 64 yards from Tavon Austin, right?
Off top.
Yeah. So that means Dak Prescott, if you take that away, is 15 completions for 96 yards? Paige and Sam Bradford. Anybody want to see Sam Bradford numbers? That's where that is, and no touchdowns. So Zeke still didn't have 100 yards. This offense, to me, because they don't pose a threat with the deep ball, is always going to face this fate.
I'm still not convinced off of one game. No way. I said at the beginning, the very first show we had of the season for the show on Sundays, that I think he's still taking that step backwards. So he's coming off that sensational rookie year. Mm. Like, played well last night, but I still think he's going to get better. And I have no doubt that he's going to be a great quarterback in this league. He's a good quarterback at this point. That's all he is. He's a good quarterback at this point. But the ceiling is high for him. I think he's going to get a lot better once they get those weapons. Have they figured things out? I still say it's going to be tough for them to win more than 7-8 games this year. I just don't see it. But he looked good. He looked a whole lot better. And Zeke looked better, too. Even didn't get 100 yards, but he looked good. He was grinding them out on the ground.
Yeah, if you're using this offense as the leading charge in any game, they won't win 7 games. Like, offense, you carry us. Defensively, the way that they performed last night, the way that they performed 2 weeks, that defense can win games for them. But that offense, that's not going to win many games.
I'll say this, and I hear everyone say it. Everyone believes that the defense outplayed the offense last night. I somewhat disagree. Hmm. I thought the Giants' offensive line looked as disorganized and unpracticed as any professional offensive line I've ever seen. Chris Collinsworth at some point last night said, hey, you know what? They're not really getting physically beat. Yeah. They just can't pick up stunts. And when he said it, I was like, I'm not sure if I buy that. Then they showed a package of highlights, and I was like, damn, he's right. And so I just felt like Dallas' defense is overvalued because the Giants' offensive line played like hot garbage. What I saw from Dak, I'm just the accuracy with the ball, the toughness in the running game, and the creativity in the running game from him. He made some guys miss. That's an element that I didn't really know he had in terms of making guys miss. I thought they made far greater strides on the offensive side. The defense looked great, but I thought they had a lot of help. Whoever the Giants offensive line coach is right now, he needs to be in meeting. Yeah.
He had a week like them kickers did all week. Like, just like, poor. Lucky you have a job this week. I'm with Tony, though. It has been a regression to the mean since his rookie campaign in Dak Prescott. Like, if you had to say once again, are you getting better or are you getting worse? Where's the arrow pointing? Don't say straight.
Up.
It's not pointing up. He's not the same talent we thought he was year one after that campaign. Right now, we're saying we want to see that again, but we're not seeing it on a consistent basis.
But I will say this, though. He's a champion.
Oh, yeah.
Because of what happened last week. He did not play that well. He came out in front of the national spotlight and played well, kind of like Matt Ryan did, came out there and shut everybody up.
Got called out by the Giants, stepped up. My arrow and Dax headed up. All right, welcome back. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst Greg Jennings. Let's move to Atlanta. A game that Greg called expertly yesterday.
See you, big dog.
All right, where the Falcons held on to beat the Panthers in a quarterback showdown that didn't disappoint. Matt Ryan actually took a page out of Cam Newton's book and ran for 2 touchdowns while Cam was impressive in the pocket, throwing for 3 touchdowns and more than 300 yards. Greg and Marcellus, I left that game and I watched every drop of it. Mm. That's as good as I've ever seen Cam Newton play from the pocket as a quarterback. I thought he outplayed Matt Ryan. I left that game feeling better about Carolina, Cam Newton, and Norv Turner than I did Matt Ryan, the Falcons, and Steve Sarkisian.
So you're the one. Okay, yeah, you're the one that thought Cam Newton outperformed Matt Ryan, even though Matt Ryan won the game.
Cam was phenomenal.
Matt Ryan had a better passer rating in the game.
Cam was phenomenal.
And Matt Ryan out-cammed Cam in 2 rushing touchdowns.
Matt Ryan had better receivers.
Now we're going to go into the construction of the team. On that performance, look, I respect Cam balled out, and I hate to choose one, but I'm looking at Matt Ryan because of week one, how bad that offense looked. Sark, let's talk about Coach Sarkisian and all the fire he's under. And he comes out and goes 4 for 4 in the red zone. And not only that, but he shows us a different dimension in terms of no Devontae Freeman, but you still went out there and ran the ball effectively. And Matt Ryan got into the end zone twice without throwing it. So I got to say, look, get a little of the monkey off your back. Matt Ryan won the day.
Yeah, I'm with you, Marcellus. When I watched the two and knowing what they were trying to do going into the game, did Cam have a great game? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I thought his composure in the pocket, his ability to still extend the plays but keep his eyes downfield was superb. His receivers let him down. Matt Ryan's did not. But when I watched Matt Ryan this entire week, his preparation, the things that he talked about, the points of emphasis was the red zone. He showed his team. He had 2 passing touchdowns as well. But the 2 rushing touchdowns let me know that he took ownership on himself. Like, guys, it's important to me because it's going to fall back on. When we talk, we're not talking about the Atlanta Falcons offense and the receivers and all that. We're going to talk about Matt Ryan.
Right.
What he did do, what he did not do. And yesterday, he did it all for that ball club.
I mean, this was my favorite game of the weekend. In the first half, and this isn't about Cam. This is just about how the game swung. There was a pass interference call where Carolina got off the field on 3rd down, receiver fell down, the ref made a horrible call, Atlanta stayed on the field. That changed momentum. That changed the game to me. Then coming out of the end zone, Cam hit Devin Funchess. They're trying to get out from under their own territory with a fade stop. That is the most, it's one of the, it was perfect. It was Brady-like.
The only place he could throw it.
On the dime, put it right on his hand. Devin Funchess drops it. Cam Newton to me, and I've been a guy that's like, is he ever going to figure it out from the pocket? Is he ever going to be that elite level quarterback from the pocket? And last night or yesterday was the first time I was like, oh, yes, he will be.
But why last night? Like, this guy has won an MVP.
With other things, this brilliantly from the pocket. He did it with his legs previously. He did it with some big plays. There's no Greg Olsen yesterday. He did it differently. This was like a Cam, like, oh, this dude here, he can play till he's 40 playing this way.
But I think what we saw yesterday was him showing his comfort level and his maturity as far as taking the check down. Using Christian McCaffrey the way we all thought that he should use him to take and alleviate some of the hits and the blows that Cam Newton takes throughout the course of the season. But if you look at his progression in this offense, Rob Chudzinski, his first offensive coordinator in 2011 when he first came into the league, was under Norv in San Diego. Hmm. Number system. Norv then goes to Cleveland when Chudzinski gets the head coach job and kind of conformed his own offense to fit Chudzinski's style. Then he brings it to Minnesota, and now it's in Carolina with Cam. So Cam has really run the same offense, just changed verbiage. So his comfort level should be at an all-time high. Norv emphasizes, hit your check down. If it's not there, check down. And he has a receiver running out of the backfield.
We could see who called that game yesterday. I mean, you bring it up. The nuggets coming deep and the layers of it. But you're right. I played with Norv in San Diego and just watching his offense. He wants to pound the ball and then set up everything from it, whether it's check downs, whether it's play action. But he has something more dynamic when you talk about Cam Newton. People were sitting there saying, what would he do week one against the Cowboys? And will he let Cam Newton run as much as he has in the past? And he did. And now you see a different dimension even in the pocket.
My takeaway is I think Carolina has a better season than Matt Ryan and the Falcons. think they finished higher in the standings, and I think Cam has a better season than Matt Ryan. And I was a guy that was high on Matt Ryan, but I'm a little bit off him, and I'm very high on Cam.
Disagree.
All right, to Green Bay, where the Packers and Vikings played to this season's second tie after Vikings rookie kicker Daniel Carlson missed 3 field goals, including 2 in overtime. Of course, the game only got to overtime after a controversial roughing the passer call on Packers linebacker Clay Matthews kept the Minnesota's game-tying drive alive. Needless to say, Matthews wasn't happy after the game.
I have so many emotions kind of running through as far as just what a terrible call it was. But at the same time, I don't know what else to do. I mean, I don't know. You let me know. Let me tell me, did I put pressure on him? Because I thought I hit him within, his waist to chest. I got my head across, put my hands down. And to call it, at that point in the game, it's just, I mean, it's unbelievable. I don't know. It's a difficult call to call. And, I mean, you see how it changed the game. And I know there's an emphasis on protecting quarterbacks, but it's gotten out of control here.
Look, it was a ridiculous call. It wiped out an interception. Get it. The worst call in that game, though, was by Mike Zimmer, the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings. At the end of that overtime, when your kicker's already missed 2 field goals and he missed one of them just horribly.
Yeah.
Looked like a junior high kid out there trying to kick a 40-yard field goal. How the hell do you say, I'm going to settle for a 35-yard field goal? He let time run off the clock. He had a timeout he could have used. They could have just run the ball because Green Bay's defense was gassed at that point and just get 5, 7, 10 yards closer to make it as easy on your kicker as possible. I thought Mike Zimmer's call was far worse than the referee's call on Clay Matthews.
I disagree, homeboy. Look, I'm not going there on Zimmer and that. A man, he's as faithful as his options. Chris Rock, right?
Yeah.
Tell me who the backup kicker is on Minnesota. Don't worry, I'll wait, because I don't know. Do you even have one? Do you even carry one? No one has a backup kicker. You put the kicker out there to either save his job or lose his job. And I'm going to keep putting you out there in 1 week, so when the week is over, I can walk upstairs if I'm Mike Zimmer, and I can say, he gots to go. Daniel Carlson cost himself that job. You have to put him out there because you have no backups. Here's the worst call. Clay Matthews. And I look, playing that position, I get it. Where do you hit a guy? We've seen the rule changes, whether it's driving him to the ground in, 1995 they changed the rule, or helmet-to-helmet contact. But by the spirit of the law, yeah, you know what? Spirit of the rule, he's innocent. But by the letter, he's guilty. Watch Clay Matthews and watch his left leg. This is a dat dudes moment. Watch this left leg, not this step. Watch this step. Locks and goes up. Referees are taught C-level. C-level means here's your body position when you're going through a play. If your body drops, which it should because you're trying to make a tackle, that's fine. That's legal. But if your body rises to make a same tackle on a quarterback, please explain naturally why would you go up to come down. And because he went up to come down, there was a little ump on there, a little intent, a little Jake the Snake, and that's what got him caught.
I agree with you all the way up until that last part.
Let me hear.
I think that Mike Zimmer going with his kicker, absolutely. You got to trust your personnel. This is, to your point, This is all you got. This is all you
trust
have.
Trust to make a 25-yarder, not a 35-yarder.
Jason, I understand that. This is a professional NFL kicker for the Minnesota Vikings. He makes this kick every single day all week long.
Not yesterday.
He did not yesterday, and that's on him. And he'll have to deal with the repercussions of that, whether they keep him or they decide to let him go.
But to
allow your team to put your team in a position to where you can still win the game.
Yes.
And you've counted on all your other personnel. And to then say, well, we're not going to rely on you as a special teams guy, and this is what we have brought you in here to do.
How many times you got to catch your wife cheating on her before you believe she's a cheater? The man got busted twice on the first 2 field goals. Now you're supposed to know what he is. He's garbage. He can't help you win on that Sunday.
She ain't going to cheat on you all them times in the same day.
No,
if it's the same day, hey, man, you had a bad day, baby. If it's anything else, if next week in the 2 weeks, then we got a problem, man. Come on.
But the Clay Matthews deal, by the letter of the law, like you mentioned, he's wrong.
Wrong.
He's going to get thrown. They're going to throw that flag. The point of emphasis is to protect the quarterback. Mind you, the reason why this rule is the way it is because of your quarterback and the hit that he took last year against that very team, the Minnesota Vikings. So you can't really – you can't argue against the ref. He's doing his job.
Well, let's be clear. The ref has already said this wasn't about any new rule. This was about burping, as
yeah.
said, which has been established previously. Marcel's point about going up and coming down,
right.
that's been established previously. And I do want to be clear here. The Vikings have cut Daniel Carlson.
Mm.
They've gone with Dan Bailey. And he should have cut him in the moment, Sunday. In the
right
moment.
On the field,
he should have been like, okay, anything beyond 25 yards, this guy can't help me. If Mike Zimmer had done that, they'd be undefeated.
Mike Zimmer
should
have quit on him.
In the middle of Vontae Davis. Hey, Daniel, you heard Vontae Davis.
Yeah. All right, welcome back to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. He's Marcellus. Let's move to boxing, where Canelo Alvarez and Triple G fought to another controversial decision in their rematch Saturday night. Of course, their first fight ended in a draw that had Triple G fans angry, and they weren't any happier after Canelo actually got the win in a narrow decision this weekend. Look, man, it's Vegas. It's always about the money.
Mm.
That arena's filled with Canelo fans. He's the real draw. I don't understand why anybody's shocked or surprised. Triple G's got to knock this dude out if he wants to beat him. And, you know, they're going to continue to make money with Canelo Alvarez, and people are going to tune in for a third fight.
God, that's the problem with this one, Jason. You're right. Triple G should have to knock out Canelo if he's going to win that fight because he's not the cash cow. Except he's the champion. And I thought you had to knock the champion out to get the decision, but that's what was proven false.
Don't nothing move but the money, Marcellus.
Hey,
It don't make sense.
Don't make sense. DJ Quick, I hear you. But here's the problem. Okay, this is why this is a robbery. Because we basically walked into a fight and said only one fighter can win on the cards. Because they've had two fights. And that means three judges, two fights, six cards. And Triple G has only won one of the six cards. Come on, man. One of the six cards when he won both fights. But now you're saying he only wins one of the six cards. Here's the biggest issue I have with looking at this. Beyond you got to follow the money and the cash cow and all that. Is that the fact that they said Canelo won the fight because he won the story of the fight. What was the story of the fight? Who ever thought that he would stand toe-to-toe with a brawler? He would initiate. He would be the aggressor. Okay, and how many points did he get for that? Because you know what happened? Even though he led in power punches, the dude almost got knocked out in the 11th round.
And almost.
Almost, but look, in terms of devastation, who had who on the ropes the most? It was Triple G. And if you want to talk about the jabs, Triple G was like, oh, you're going to be in my face? I would take a step back, back, take a step back, back, and kept hitting him to the tune where we saw a lot of Canelo misses. I get the cash cow. I get the fact that you got to protect the future of the sport, but this is what undermines boxing and why UFC is coming on the charge.
Now, I don't think this undermines boxing. I think actually this is going to make the third fight even more interesting. And look, Marcellus, the man got to the 12th round, and if Triple G has stayed aggressive in the 12th and won the 12th, I don't think we would be having this discussion.
Great point.
Canelo got to the final, at the end of the fight, and again, the narrative had been that, he would stay away from me, he wouldn't be aggressive. He got to the end of the fight, stayed aggressive, won the 12th round, put the judges in a position, gave them their reason, gave them their excuse. And if you're Triple G, you have to know what you're dealing with. When you're fighting against all that momentum and all that money, and it's Las Vegas, and it's built around the fight game, and who can generate money, and who can bring that Mexican fan base out, it's Canelo Alvarez.
Yeah, I get that, but Triple G, as he's tried to steal the mantra, I fight Mexican style, you're still not Mexican.
Yeah.
Look, the fact that they can't sell this fight as much as they should because this is a tremendous fight on paper and in the ring. But the pre-fight hype
is always a little off target because, one, Canelo understands English but doesn't speak it well, and Triple G is doing better, but none of them are like a Mayweather where you're just going to hear it, or Conor McGregor, who's not even of the sport. You're going to hear it, and you have to watch it before it happens. That also hurts.
Since you said that, I'd rather see these two fight again than Mayweather and Pacquiao. We'll maybe get into that tomorrow. All right, to New England, where Tom Brady and the Patriots could be close to getting some much-needed help at wide receiver, with the NFL Network's Ian Rappaport reporting that the team is close to a trade with the Browns for Josh Gordon, whose erratic behavior this weekend prompted Cleveland to move on from the troubled wide receiver. I could understand the Cowboys going after Josh Gordon. They're so desperate. I don't know if I think this is the right move for the Patriots, because I just keep Josh Gordon, and people are acting like it's Randy Moss or somebody. The dude, your son wasn't alive the last time Josh Gordon was a big-time player in the NFL. That was 2013.
That's true. You got me.
I just don't see this as some super high-impact signing that's going to make a great big difference in New England.
I think it is going to have a huge impact. He's on the right side of 30. Let's respect that. This is a guy who has tremendous talents and a skill set that when all of his coordinates are pointing in the right direction.
You mean when he's not high?
When he's not up there? It's legal out here, though, so, you know, that's he need to play for L.A. when he's focused, oh, my God, special, even in short spurts. You saw it in week one with Cleveland. One catch, one touchdown, one tremendous touchdown. And now you get him with no slight to Tyrod Taylor, and all the Cleveland quarterbacks of yesteryear, but let's say Tom Brady. And it has worked for Randy Moss. And it didn't work for other guys like a Chad Ochocinco. So it's not just getting in the system and getting around Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Is do you really want this? But if he wants this with those skills, oh, it's going to happen.
He's two touchdowns since 2013, Marcellus.
Yeah, then play. He's been in rehab. He's been getting his life together. That's not going to happen on Bill Belichick's watch.
Okay, okay.
High risk, high reward.
Explain this to me then. Show me anybody other than Muhammad Ali who set out for 3 years of anything and then came back and was the same player, same level of athlete. You just can't sit and
How long did Jordan sit out?
2 years or a year and a half, something like that.
Okay, that was close.
Again, you really going to compare Josh Gordon to Michael Jordan?
You did that. You said, find somebody. I found somebody. You're like, you really going to go there? See, this is media right here. You got me set up, man. I just tell you somebody.
You can't sit for this long and then just come back. And then he didn't show up in time for meetings in Cleveland. And I get that they have a different culture in New England. But we've already seen, like, Chad Johnson go there, and he didn't fit in and work. He's not a responsible person.
And I think that's going to work to his advantage. Chad, respect, love. Chad was like a great. He was a living great. I mean, Chad, it took a lot to humble Chad. You had to chisel at that ego because Chad thought he knew the right way. Right. Got around Belichick. He's like, all right, I hear you, but, I mean, it's worked for me other places. So here's the thing. If you look at what you said about Josh, it worked, but not consistently. Maybe you need to buy in. I think he buys into Belichick and the Patriot way, and they get the most out of him. Look, no organization in football extracts the best qualities out of a player more so than New England. Hopefully that's the narrative, and hopefully they can make it happen.
Work for LeGarrette Blount, you're right.
It did.
All right, welcome back. All right, Marcellus, you know I can't stand what's happening out there on social media. So we've got our social media manager, Darnell, Ball State and Warren Central's finest.
Where's Darnell? Because I don't see a Ball State shirt. What's
come
wrong?
On now, hey.
Oh, the flag
come
this week.
Come on now.
What happened this week? How'd y'all play? How'd y'all do?
We're not going to talk about that.
Oh.
We're not going to talk about that. It wasn't the best performance.
Bad officiating, Darnell.
Bad officiating.
That's right. The best,
what
man.
You got social media-wise?
Yes, sir. Let's start in Tampa, where Ryan Fitzpatrick balled out yesterday.
Yeah.
But he looked even better at his post-game presser, showing up swagged out in DeSean Jackson's tracksuit. Twitter loved it, with someone comparing this to his old look, Harvard Ryan Fitzpatrick versus the Ryan Fitzpatrick she told you not to worry about. He also got compared to bearded legend Chris Birdman Anderson and Conor McGregor. Do you guys like the new swaggy Ryan Fitzpatrick?
You know, I know you loved it.
Heck yeah!
I know you loved it, but I like it.
Huh?
I like it, but, you know, I just want... That's something he can get away with because he's Ivy League.
Okay.
If Cam walked out like that, the internet would melt with criticism and how immature he was. But again, it works because he's Ivy League.
Yeah.
We're not expecting... It's funny, but I just... It did raise an eyebrow.
I mean, look, it's out of his comfort zone, obviously. Shout out to Ivy League gang all day. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Respect the swag. I like the fact that he's winning even off the field. Like, he's becoming something that is likable. And when you become likable and you're performing like him, Jameis Winston shows up and he's like, hey, bruh, like, I got the locker room. Deshaun didn't let him just steal it. Deshaun was like, go ahead and wear it. That shows relationship. It's working for Fitz.
That's what concerned me, to be quite honest with you.
All right.
Is Deshaun giving this over to him? I wonder how Jameis, if I'm sitting at home, I wonder how he feels like. They really bonding like that. They vibing like that.
Oh, wait a minute. That's so that young.
I'm the captain now.
That's so, like, junior high. We're like, if I don't like them, you can't like them either. Like, nah, dog, keep balling. That's on you.
Got a millennial over
That's true. I mean, it's definitely going to be feeling some type of way in the locker room, man. You see everyone's vibing. He's playing well, so.
His first incompletion or interception if Jameis come back? Oh,
he
man.
Be so happy.
Be looking at Fitz like, get back in there.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, let's move to L.A., where the Rams looked like a super team yesterday, dominating the Cardinals 34-0, which got the attention of another super team guy, Kevin Durant, who posted on Instagram, Aaron Donald is one of the most impressive athletes in all the sports. I would join the Rams right now, LOL. KD is taking a lot of heat for joining a super team, but you guys got to admit it. It's pretty funny, right?
I love this.
You and love that?
Yeah, I love it. It's self-deprecating. I love self-deprecation. I love the self-awareness. He's leaning into his brand a little bit.
And What's that? We'll lean into what brand? What part of his brand?
That he's very transparent, that he's very self-aware, that's what he's trying to portray. Mm. And so... I just love self-deprecation. You know, this is a very good look for Kevin Durant.
What did I tell you about the pyramid of athleticism? No one chooses football. And that's why he ended this with an exclamation of LOL. Like, boy, stop. Ain't nobody
playing football.
You
know why he ended it with LOL?
What?
Because he's 7 foot, 150 pounds. Even if he wanted to play football, he couldn't.
Exactly. And he don't want to. I mean, look, let me hit you with a little bit of your...
Uh-oh.
What the hell? No, first of all, we don't believe you. You need more people. We need the truth. If you're Kevin Durant... You have to say something in the form of reality and then make it funny. You can't just go absurd. Because, no, did you for 1 second think, like LeBron, when they talk about LeBron playing NFL, did you ever think
Marcellus
Durant?
This is pure comedy.
Was
this
it?
Is a comedic genius. He's playing off the absurdity of it all. Hmm. It's not supposed to touch in reality. Okay. He's cracking a joke.
Okay.
And it's awesome.
It's awful. It's awful. I get it. Okay.
What's next, Darnell?
Yes, to a game we talked about earlier, Vikings and Packers, who tied after an ugly overtime. People are kind of losing their minds that this was a second straight week in the NFL with a tie, including ESPN's Teddy Bruschi, who tweeted, 2 weeks in the NFL and two ties. Overtime rules need to change. Pro football should have a winner and a loser. Y'all think overtime rules need to change?
Absolutely not. I don't even get this controversy. When Teddy tweeted this out, I was like, that game was, as a fan, it was great. The kicker and the madness of what Mike Zimmer did, the kicker being awful, the even the controversial officiating on Clay Matthews. And to me, it was the perfect ending to have that kicker, like, make everybody go home mad and frustrated. I don't have any problem with the NFL's overtime rules or the fact that a game can end in a tie.
Yeah, look, I'm with you. Five quarters is it. First of all, let's just be real. Six quarters? We're like, hey, man, look, we want to lose now in that sixth quarter. No one wants to play a six-quarter football. How do you tweak it? If you go back to the old rules and say, hey, first score wins, then everyone's saying that's not fair because you just didn't give our offense a chance. So if I hear an intelligent way to tweak it, maybe, but not extend it.
Some people love the college overtime rule. I don't. I think it's hokey. It takes special teams out of it.
Right.
Kickoff and all that, punts and all that, takes it out. I don't like it. That's not real football.
I'm with you.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yes, finally to San Francisco, where Niners fans are breathing a sigh of relief after Jimmy G got his first win of the year. But you know who never lost faith in Jimmy? His porn star date, Kiara Mia, who told TMZ before the game that her summer fling would bounce back.
Oh, come on, everybody has a bad day.
Right.
Fall once, you get back up. Simple. It's like, when someone's a star and someone just radiates greatness, the whole entire team's gonna radiate greatness.
Right.
Like, it's a whole new level, it's a whole new vibration. Like, everyone's feeling everything. As soon as it all comes together, I promise you, there's gonna up level.
So you're still a big believer in Jimmy G?
Oh, of course.
Well, what's the status?
I believe in him.
What's the status between you and Jimmy G right now? You guys still talking, friends?
Like I said, everything I touch turns to gold.
Really?
Would Jimmy G ever let this live down?
I'm not sure if everything she touches turns to gold. If you watch Jimmy G string this weekend, that was not a good look.
No.
This weekend, he got bailed out of this. They should have lost this weekend. He threw a horrible interception. He looks a little shaky in the pocket. He does not look the same to me. I'm concerned about Jimmy G. I think she didn't turn him into gold. She turned him into
bronze.
Or silver.
I get it, man. Look, Jimmy GQ will be fine, but these are the aftershocks of your life changing. One, your football life changes because it's not just 7 starts anymore. It's an entire 8-9-month process of defensive coordinators picking you apart, saying, we know how to throw things at you and see how you respond in the first 2 games of the year. But then it's off the field. Like, the dynamic of I'm the richest player in NFL history after 7 starts. I'm walking around here, got all this money, and I'm dating a porn star, which I have no problem with because a lot of people date porn stars by themselves at night, late, phones on. So now I'm not going to go there and diss this dude for something that is of real talk and is reality. So look, let Jimmy G do what he has to do off the field. Stop making this something that undermines his game.
You've never heard the saying doing too much?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's
Jimmy G.
Dating her is doing too much?
Publicly.
What do you mean? Where else are we going to go?
Huh?
What's the problem?
The hotel.
What if he likes her? So you saying once you become a porn star.
The stash away apartment.
You can't go to we can't go to a restaurant together because you're.
Not in paparazzi headquarters, no. Jimmy G's doing too much. And again, if you watched him play this weekend, not good.
It's not good, but is it worse because, and you dated a porn star? Like, I just don't see that part. Let him live.
Distraction.
All right, today we're looking at Vontae Davis, the Bills corner, who will now forever be remembered as the guy who decided to retire at halftime. I know some people might have Vontae way down, but this didn't change my overall opinion of him all that much. I previously had Vontae at a 58 approval rating. He only drops 2 points, Marcellus, to 56.
Okay.
And that's because I have his job performance going down. He quit at halftime. I previously had him at a 14. It drops 8 to a 6. But his all-time great status actually goes up. No one would remember Vontae Davis before this incident.
Good point.
Now, because of this incident, he will forever be remembered, 2-time Pro Bowler who quit at halftime of a game. He's become more of an all-time great. So those kind of balance each other out. Character, I go down 2 points because that was a low character move, quitting on your
teammates. You think?
Yeah. Authenticity, he's the most authentic guy I've ever seen in sports. He's a perfect 25.
Oh, man. Look, all-time great, you go up.
Yeah.
You remember, but remember for what? Like I don't want my grandkids remembering me and saying, you know who granddaddy used to be? Oh, that guy.
You just want to be remembered, Marcellus.
That's the beginning of the conversation. The end is remember for something that is positive and great. For me, he went down. And I didn't think in totality he would go down as much as he did. But when I started to list him, yeah, brother, you had to go down. Job performance went down 4. You know why? This is a guy that's been good, but this year, quitting on your team, obviously that's not a good look. But this is a guy who's had 4 interceptions 4 different times in his career, so I still had to say you weren't going to play at that level. Obviously, you were going to quit. All-time greatness, you go down 1. 22 career picks. That's roughly around 300th all-time in the NFL. That ain't bad because you're looking at right now the 220th all-time sack leader. So he right around me, whatever that is. Hall of kind of sorry, kind of good. What's that world? Let's talk about his character. Lord, you couldn't go down any farther. You quit. Like, a lot of people, we say quit. We'll say LeBron didn't want to make the shot at the end of the game. He quit. We use that the wrong way. He quit. And then, of course, authenticity, you go up to 20. That's gangster. Say what you want about how it is. He broke it down. He went to a place where all players want to go once you ball major money. Respect to him for that part.